Good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Weissoon. If you enjoy real-world hunting and fishing talk, you're really going to enjoy listening to my good friend, Luke Clayton, and his guest for the next hour.
This is David Fox, and welcome to Outdoors with Luke Clayton and Friends. Luke has been a recognized outdoors writer for the past 3 decades and writes for a host of outdoor publications. Luke pens a weekly newspaper outdoors column that appears in over 40 Texas newspapers. Luke is on the pro staff of Pyramid Air, your one-stop shop for everything air gun related. Smoking techs, electric smokers, feel free to contact Luke through his website, catfishradio.org. Now let's join Luke and his guests for this week's show.
Well, thank you guys and folks. It is time for us to talk about the outdoors, like we've been doing for 20 years with Mr. Larry Weissoon in Campfire Talk. Larry is standing by just chock full of fun information to share. Larry, good morning to you, buddy.
Good morning. I think you're saying trying to tell people I'm full of it, by golly. I kept it away. There are lots of ways that's true. Before we get into this, we need to thank DSC, Conservation Education Advocacy, Hornady, Accurate, Deadly, Dependable, Taurus, they make the Raging Hunter handguns that I dearly love, and Stealth Vision that comes out of Crockett, Texas, right there. Just the finest hunting optics that, and I've used just about all of them.
I know you have.
I have ever found. So, we're here. We've got a bunch of stuff coming up this next week. I think you and I are going to go be with Bill Carey and maybe Chris Carey and do a little fishing.
That's right.
I've got some stuff coming up right after that, heading back to Europe, you know, good Lord willing,
yeah,
and all those kind of good things. So, but we're also into fawning season right now. The first fawn that I've seen on my place, which is about 80 miles west of Houston, was like May the 5th. So I know we're right at that time frame of those fawns dropping the ground.
That's true, Larry. And, you know, I don't know. We hate to, demonize. We talked about coyotes before, but we are deer hunters. By golly, we like to hunt and we like to eat deer. I mean, that's just true. That's the way it is. So, but there's other critters out there though that make their living hunting and eating deer. One thing that I'd like to talk or you to discuss with us that I know a little bit about, and you know a lot more than I do, is I've read a lot and I've witnessed buzzards which is not surprising, on dead deer, you know, dead young deer, fawns. I've seen that. What I really didn't take time to think about is I've read that the black vulture and then the turkey vulture, that's two,
right?
That's the two that we have here, I guess, in Texas, you know, across much of the country. But the black vulture is the one that has been documented killing baby fawns. I mean, and you've witnessed that somewhere, maybe South Texas, excuse me, in the past, haven't you?
Luke, I really have. You know, years ago, we were involved in all kinds of different research projects where we had penned deer, you know, like some of the game breeders and things like that. Now, we were raising fawns primarily for research purposes, doing disease work, nutritional work, and all those kind of things. But yes, I witnessed it there, to where when we started having fawns, you see the little black-headed vultures show up, and they are really aggressive as far as taking prey down, actually. If you get right down to it, the turkey buzzard, the red-headed one, they pretty much feed on just stuff that is obviously and has been dead for a while.
But carrion,
The little black vultures, and I've heard them called everything from Mexican vultures to, you know, my gosh, all kinds of different things. But they are very aggressive, and we had problems and actually watched them, unfortunately, you know, not thinking that it was caused by them, but where they would swoop down when that fawn was born, and they'd go after the eyes to start with, and then they'd go after the fawn, you know, the rest of it as well too. And we've talked about fawns in the past, you know, those first 4, 5, 6, 7 days, those fawns are, they're programmed, if you will, so that they will lay there and not move when something approaches. And that's one of the reasons there, you know, with the ability of wild hogs in some instances to be able to smell them. And then of course you got those buzzards flying up above and they're looking for anything that's laying still. And so they will swoop down and they can, and in certain instances, depending, particularly if there's, you know, not a whole lot of ground vegetation, where those little fawns can hide in, but even from the air, they can be seen. So absolutely, they can be a predator on fawns. And in certain years, particularly, and almost probably in every year, but in certain years, they seem to be a whole lot worse than they are other years.
Yeah, I've read too, and this is strictly not firsthand knowledge on my part, but out in the sheep country, out in the hill country in parts of West Texas, you know, the same thing with sheep, and they've been a big problem in areas and with baby sheep when they're born, you know. So it stands to reason that would be like a smorgasbord for them, you know. Sheep or, you know, deer, there might be one fawn here and one there, but in sheep country, when they start, you know, giving birth, well, they're going to be a bunch of baby, you know, sheep on the ground. So I did read, and I don't want to try to get into any technical stuff here, but I did read that in certain instances that there's even been permits issued to control them, and very highly controlled. You know, vultures, are off limits. You can't shoot right. them, you know. It's illegal to shoot one, but there are certain permitted areas in the past. I don't know where people go through, but I'm sure Texas Parks and Wildlife, if they had a real problem with them. But yeah, those baby deer, it's really a wonder, nature, how it works. But where I live, there are so many coyotes, and I know this firsthand. I'll kill in the course of a year. I'm not a serious predator hunter, but I'll kill two or three, four sometimes, just while I'm hunting hogs or whatever. But at night, you know, I do a lot of I don't usually get out to hunt these hogs until about, oh, I try to get set up, ready to hunt about 20 minutes before dark. Well,
right.
I'll be set up, and every night, you know, I'll hear three or four packs of coyotes. And very occasionally, not too uncommon, I'll have one come through when I'm hog hunting, and I'll shoot it, you know, thermal at night. But it's amazing to me, and not just baby deer, but turkeys too. There's so many predators. Raccoons are totally out of control where I live. They're just, you know, I need to do a better job on thinning them out myself. It's something I think a lot of hunters are that way, Larry, like me, maybe. You're out there and everything's real quiet, you know, and you're wanting a hog to come in or deer or whatever. But I don't pass up the opportunity on the coyotes. You know, I mean, I don't get a lot of, I really don't hunt them hard to go out and call them very much, maybe once or twice a year in the winter. But, you know, their numbers, how the deer and the turkeys around here are doing, from what I can tell, every year I seem to see more and more poults, and the turkey population seems to be strong, you know, growing every year. Kind of unique because I live on the edge, you know, in Kaufman County,
right,
the edge of eastern turkey country and Rios. Well, they stocked Rios, and you're well aware of this, on the 15,000 acre ranch here where I live, near where I live. And they stocked them, I don't know, eight or so years ago. And man, they're, you know, their range is increasing. It's a river bottom country, and they're just going up and down that river. But they're, even with all the coyotes and predators, they're still making it, you know. It's amazing.
One of the good things is they've had a good food supply, and so they're producing, in terms of turkeys, producing a fair amount of eggs. And two, I get a feeling that in some of that country, you know, there's good nesting cover and that kind of thing. But you mentioned raccoons and or coons, as we call them, you know, down the south. And they too can be predators on whitetail fawns. You start thinking about, you know, if a little fawn will weigh, you know, 3 pounds, maybe four
yeah.
pounds at the most.
Yeah.
And that, and even the average raccoon will weigh probably 10 to 12 pounds.
Yeah.
Well, it's not that big a deal for if a coon just happens up on one or happens to smell one, he get one. And again, that period where we lose fawns to things like coons, to some extent coyotes, but hogs, and also to the vultures you're talking about, is those first few days when they're not moving. When the coyotes really get after them is when that fright and flight thing comes, which starts at about a week to 10 days and moves forward to where that fawn, then he hears something, well, he jumps up and runs. And when he does that, you know, he's going to get caught. So to me, it all comes down to, you know, you have to manage everything properly. Like we talked about not very long ago with coyotes, you want to have that population at an even line, not these high peaks and valleys kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, everything benefits because the habitat's there and there's food availability, there's cover there, there's enough sufficient water, and everything does well. You know, you mentioned going back to the buzzard thing. Years ago, there were no restrictions on those kind of birds. And in those areas of western Texas and the central part of Texas, and I'm sure in other states somewhere as well too, where there have been a lot of sheep and goat, and there those fawns, I mean those kids and lambs were born pretty much in large numbers. And what would happen is that, you know, huge number of buzzards just sweep in and kill those youngsters. And I remember as a wildlife biologist with Texas Parks and Wildlife Department going on some ranches where in years prior to the passing of these laws that we have now, they would have like box traps, and they would that caught buzzards that were creating problems. And what they would do is when they found a dead animal, they would put it inside this box trap. The buzzards would land around the outside of it, walk in through little cubby hole type things where they couldn't come back out. They
Oh, yeah.
Just squeeze in, almost like you know, people used to trap quail years ago when the laws were a little bit differently. But and I can remember going up to some of those traps that had been there for years, had not been used more recently because people had pretty switched to cattle because of the when they did away with the wool and mohair incentive that the government had. A lot of people went out there, went from sheep and goats to cattle. Mm-hmm. But you'd walk up or drive up on one of these traps, and I mean, it would be almost a foot deep in buzzard bones. But as a result of that, we had a lot of fawns, and they had, you know, a decent lamb or kid crop. So to me, the fact that you can get permits in some of these areas is, you know, because it comes back down to it's conservation. It's the wise use of it. Should not be preservation. And I've said so many times, conservation promotes life. Preservation promotes nothing but death. So we need to manage all the different species when you get right down to it, to make sure that we got the proper habitat for everything from songbirds to butterflies to, you know, you name the critters.
You bet. Larry, how about, we're just about out of time, but mention the Dallas Safari Club event.
Absolutely.
Coming up. Thanks. Here. Yeah.
Thank you for reminding me. Yes, we have the Summer Expo coming up July 23rd, 24th, 25th, 26th at the Gaylord Texan Resort in Grapevine, Texas. It's going to be an absolutely fabulous show. I know there's something over 400 booths that are going to be there for the majority of it. On the Saturday night, we have our DSC Foundation Gala, which is also our fundraiser, and tremendous number of different kind of hunts, everything from stuff we're doing on the Choctaw to all over the world when you get right down to it. And if people can't be there in person, and you can register to be there, and you don't have to be a member to attend, you can just come on in. But to learn more about either one of them, you can go to dscf.org, which is the DSC Foundation website, or biggame.org, which is the DSC website. And then you're going to be there some of the time. I'll be there. And we'd really love to sit down and visit with a whole lot of folks while we're there.
For sure. Maybe get some of our Catfish Radio listeners from the past 20 years to come by, and who knows, might just schedule them to be on the air with us, Larry.
So, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you very much, buddy, and we'll see you soon. How about that?
Yes, we will. See everybody here next week.
Friends, Mr. Larry Wysoon is going to tell you about the finest hunting optics that we have ever found.
Look, these are called Stealth Vision. They come from Crockett, Texas. Dr. John McCall developed them. They're 34 millimeter tubes as opposed to the narrower tubes, so more light transmission. They have a little green light that comes on when that scope is leveled, because that's when you want to pull the trigger. They have an optional lighted reticle as well, too, and a whole lot of other products. And folks can learn more about them by going to stealthvision.com.